The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today. It is Friday, February the 2nd. Can't believe we're already into February, but that's the way it goes. It just keeps moving along on the PGA Tour. And round two of the Waste Management Phoenix Open will start shortly at TPC in Scottsdale. Joining us today will be Phil Blackmar, working with the Golf Channel and obviously former PGA Tour player and PGA Tour Champions player, won on both those tours, and we have a lot to talk about with Phil. In particular, maybe we'll bring up one of his fellow alumni with the University of Texas. That would be Jordan Spieth, who got off to a rough start yesterday in the first round of Phoenix. First time we've seen Jordan, it seems like, in I guess since the Bahamas. So it seems like it's been a long, long time on the PGA Tour since we've seen Jordan Spieth. So we'll talk to Phil about that in just a little bit, and a lot of other things, including have to talk about 16th hole. I mean, Phil's there, and the 16th hole is infamous, notorious, and a lot of fun at Phoenix. So a lot of things to talk about. Frank Bassett, as always, joins us from the Nashville studios. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm 17 degrees. That's how I'm doing. You know how I feel about
it
cold
chilly.
Weather. I just got back
chilly.
From the PGA Merchandise Show. It was 75 and 80. It's 17 degrees here. My car is frozen. My golf clubs are screaming for Florida. They're trying to crawl out, jump in a ship sticks box, and make their way to Florida without me. That's how bad it is.
It is chilly.
So I'm doing great. Yeah. I sound like Rodney Dangerfield. I get no respect.
Well, it's not. You know, this is Super Bowl weekend coming up, and at least you're not in Minneapolis because while it's an indoor game, I don't know if you've been keeping up with that, it's supposed to be the coldest weather in a city that's ever hosted a Super Bowl. I think they expect it to be 10, 15 below on Sunday for the Super Bowl. Thank God it's indoors. And by the way, remember it was in New York a couple of years ago, outdoors, and they rolled the dice. Well, they got fairly decent weather because New York is also going to be hit. So this Super Bowl Sunday, had it been in New York, they're going to be right around 2 degrees.
Yeah.
So it would have been a huge difference maybe in that ball game had they played in New York this year instead of a couple of years ago. But anyway, Nashville, I guess you're balmy. You're 17 compared to Minneapolis. You're about 30 degrees warmer.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You're so happy.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk to a guy who's in a chilly morning climate because that's the way it is in Scottsdale. There's been a few times when they've had to, more than a few, had to delay the start of the Phoenix Open because of frost and snow and a lot of other things, but it should warm up nicely like it did yesterday. Phil Blackmar joins us again from the PGA Tour, PGA Tour Champions, and Golf Channel doing a great job broadcasting right now. Phil, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And, Frank, I'm sorry to say it's supposed to be 75 or 80 here today as well.
Okay.
Oh.
So wait a minute. Let me run downstairs and stop the ship sticks guy and send my clubs to Arizona. I'll be out there, Phil. Phil, it's good to have you on the show. It's been a long time since you and I've run into each other out on the road. I think the last time we were together, you were trying to teach work on Brendan Sweeney's swing in the restaurant bar / whatever it was in Opa-locka, Alabama.
You know what, and I can say that I don't think I had anything whatsoever to do with him winning here last year either. So it has been a while.
Yeah, it has. It's good to have you on, man. It's great to talk to you as always.
Hey, Phil. So far, first round of Phoenix tournament, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Your impressions of it, a few surprises. One, we'll get into with Jordan Spieth, maybe that he didn't go lower. He didn't have the worst round of all time, but certainly for him, not exactly what he was expecting. But overall from the field, Ricky Fowler doing very, very well. The strong field, for one. I mean, there's a lot of great golfers there, top golfers playing. Bubba Watson, we're seeing him. It seems like we haven't seen Bubba for a long, long time. Bill Haas, by the way, has the lead after one round. Shot a 64. He's at 7 under. Ricky Fowler's at 5, along with Billy Horschel and Bryson DeChambeau and a few other guys. What was your first impression of round number one?
Well, you're right. It is a very strong field, and the golf course is in great shape. But, you know, since the renovations or redo from a few years ago, it's a difficult golf course. It lengthened it. It's a very good driving course. Now, you have to drive the ball in the fairway. The rough is, while it's not super deep, it's fairly deep. You can get some pretty bad lies in the rough. And so you need to hit some fairways. The greens are rolling over 12. They're a little firm, And, you know, the conditions were just, weather conditions were ideal. And I think that's why we saw some good scores. But it's a tough track. And to see the number of good scores that we saw, I think, is a little bit surprising. There were 45 scores of 200 or better, par 71. So 45 scores in the 60s on a very good golf course. I think that surprised me more than anything else.
We're talking about Jordan Spieth, too. He's in 83rd spot right now, position, tied with several other guys. At one over. So, again, not a blow-up round, but one over 72 is what he shot. And he did have trouble. You mentioned the greens and the speed, a guy that you would think kind of has it figured out when it comes to greens and putting. And yet he was blowing a lot of his putts past the hole. And three putt because he hit it 5 feet past on one hole. I believe it was number nine and number eight and gets a three-putt and gets a bogey there. Spieth just not as sharp as maybe we expected him to be. Had a long layoff. It seemed like he should be fresh and rested, but he was a little bit rusty, it seemed like.
Well, you know, last year he didn't putt quite to the standards that he had established for the first few years of his career. And then yesterday was very surprising. The greens are in great shape. As I said, they're a little quick, but he did. He struggled with his speed. His stroke didn't have the consistent rhythm that his stroke normally has. And so he ran a number of putts by and he missed some coming back. And he didn't look comfortable at all with the speed on the greens. And he also didn't look very comfortable really with his golf swing, particularly the driver. He just didn't appear to be getting through the ball, getting up onto into his front side very well. He left a number of shots out to the right and his flight was a little higher than what you used to see. He wasn't quite the driving flight with the driver. A boring flight that you would see. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's something that, you know, he and Cameron McCormick have been working on some changes or if he's just a little rusty or where that stands. You know, only time will tell with what they're trying to do. But, you know, he's such a fine player. I don't expect him to shoot over par again today. I mean, he doesn't rarely back up a four round with another four rounds. So expect him to play much better this morning.
We're joined by Phil Blackmar with Golf Channel and watching the guys play yesterday, Phil, and again today when you'll be out there in the entire weekend. I mentioned a few that Bubba Watson, doesn't seem like we've seen Bubba for a long, long time, and some other guys that have played very well. When people have a long layoff, whether it's intentional or they have an injury and aren't playing, your experience is, is it player to player, everything's different, or does it often sometimes take a little bit of time to get back into play? We're going to talk about Tiger too in a big picture, but guys like Bubba, who we haven't seen for a while, does it sometimes take a while to work back into playing shape, if you will, in competition? Because he obviously didn't seem like a layoff hurt him much at all. Again, a 67 yesterday, and he played beautifully.
Well, layoffs can have different sides to them. Bubba needed a layoff. It wasn't a very good year last year for Bubba, and he got off using that other golf ball last year, and it wasn't a ball that suited his style of play. He's a player that maneuvers the ball and works the ball a whole lot, and the ball that he chose was a little harder for him to maneuver and work, which changed how he saw shots, and so that kind of contributed to his problems. So he needed a break to get away and just kind of let everything heal emotionally. And so it was great for Bubba. It was a good round that he played yesterday after bogeying the first hole from shoot 4 under. In general, when a tour player, a competitive player, takes some time off, the hardest thing to get back is not the physical aspects of the game or really the putting, the short game. It's the competitive edge. It's when you get a competition, there's more on the line. You tend to have a little more testosterone-induced energy in your golf swing and your putting stroke and everything else. And it really takes a little bit of time to get used to that and channel all that energy into something that's useful, being able to calm down and play the shots and have the belief and confidence that you need. And it takes some reps. And you mentioned Tiger and the long layoff he's had. I was really impressed with his performance last week after having so much time off. I mean, he drove the ball poorly on the weekend, but he scored incredibly well for where he drove the golf ball. And to do that with the time off that he had, I think is phenomenal. You just don't see most players able to step right in and compete, you know, like that, like he did. You know, he should have shot, you know, over par. You would think most players would have, but he was able to really compete and get that done. So I think for Tiger's sake, that's really encouraging. And I think he'll get the driver figured out. I think he's on a good track health-wise. I mean, he's out there slashing out of that rough. It didn't look like his back was bothering him at all. So hopefully he'll stay healthy. And if he does, the short game looked great. And I'm really encouraged for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, and I'm curious what you think, because a lot of people have had different opinions. If you go back to 3, 4, 5 months ago, what did they think? Well, Tiger's not going to win again. He may never play again. And there's a lot of doomsayers and people questioning, and rightfully so. He'd gone through a lot of turmoil, a lot of injuries and whatnot. Nobody knew how he was going to come out of that and be able to play again or be healthy enough. Did you change your opinion from a few months ago? Where did you stand as far as Tiger and his future, and where do you stand today?
Well, to be totally honest, I did not think that he would come back as healthy as he appears to be at the moment. And I mean, the two biggest question marks for Tiger, he's done a lot of things to his swing and worked on his swing, but I don't think that's going to be a big problem for him. The two biggest things for Tiger, number one was his back. Would he be able to really play and be healthy again? Tiger is the kind of player, I've watched Tiger a number of times where he warms up on the range at one speed, but then he goes to the first tee, and that first tee shot is an entirely different speed. It's much faster and much more forceful and violent. And that's how he's wired mentally and emotionally. And when you compete, your natural tendencies emotionally tend to come out. They want to come out. And so he would sit on the range making these very controlled driver swings, you know, almost three-quarter looking driver swings with this perfect balance, both feet staying on the ground. And he goes over the first tee, and he jumps off the ground with both feet and just wails at it. And that's an emotional thing. That's how he's wired. And you can't change that. If you start trying to change that, that's where you really run into trouble. So the question was, would his back allow him to compete the way that's intuitive for him to compete? And based on what we saw last week, right now, he can. But whether it will hold up, whether he can continue to do that, the only time will tell. But right now, that's not a problem. The other problem, the concern I had, was the short game. We just saw some things, you know, he had some problems and stuff. And the question was, you know, where is his short game? And he had the best short game in the world. And then he went to work with Sean Foley. And one of the things they worked on was changing his chipping and pitching. I'm like, well, why would you ever change that? What? Yeah. There's a prevalent idea a lot of times that your wedge move and your 50-yard wedge move and your chipping and your pitching, all the release pattern and how that works, how you use a club needs to fit how you swing your full swing. And that's I don't believe that at all. I think everything from 100 to 125 yards in for Tiger is being creative and artistic, and it doesn't need to be anything that mirrors what he's trying to do with his golf swing. So that concerned me when he started changing that, and then we saw him have some problems. But his short game last week was really, really, really good. So that's encouraging too. So the two biggest red flags I had, they went away last week, and so I'm really encouraged for him.
I'm thrilled.
Again, we're talking with Phil Blackmar.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, Tim. But Phil, I was one that said he probably won't come back, and I said it over and over again. And needless to say, it shows I don't know a darn thing about Tiger Woods or golf. But I was so impressed. I think he'll win again. What do you think?
I don't disagree. After what we saw last week, as long as he stays healthy, that's the biggest thing. As long as he stays healthy, then. I'm in that camp now. I think he wins again too. Now, will he win like he once won? Well, no, he's 40 years over 40 years old now, and you've got this crop of young players that did not really ever compete against Tiger Woods in his prime. They have no reason to be afraid of him or be intimidated. He's lost that edge on this group of young guys, and so I think he can compete. He's a great champion, knows how to compete. They don't lose that. And so he's still got that part of it. But we got so many great players in the game right now. Don't look for him to dominate like he did. But what I do think, though, I think he will win. I think he'll contend. I think if he does, it'll be great for the game of golf.
I think he's certainly showed that the crowds are back if Tiger's playing. And we had Steve Johnson on our show last week with Hank Haney Golf, and he was out in San Diego for the tournament, and he said it was nuts. He goes, you could watch major champions, and there'd be 9 people around them because everybody was following Tiger everywhere he went.
Yeah, the entire golf course will go to Tiger. And from Tiger's, credit to Tiger in that. Can you imagine that you come out and you haven't played in years and you're in that sort of a limelight and you receive that sort of attention, and you have that many people watching, the pressure you have to feel, because you got to feel uncertainties and anxiety. He's human like anyone else. And, the way you get past the anxiety and uncertainty is only by reps, only by being there and succeeding in situations. You can only practice, only does so much. And so think about all the pressure that is upon him when he goes to the golf course, when three-quarters of the gallery and the entire golf course comes to his group, and, of course, the attention he gets from the media and everything else. He's under a microscope. That's just so much pressure. And it's pretty incredible. Hats off to him being able to handle all that.
Hey, Tim and Phil, I've got a stat for you. When you talk about Tiger Woods, he was number one for 281 weeks at one time, but mm-hmm. held number one for a total overall of 683 weeks at number one.
That's amazing.
that's 13 years.
And I think like second is something like Greg Norman at like 109 weeks or something. I mean, it's like the disparity, like every statistic for Tiger is he's way past everybody else when it comes to that.
Yeah. These young people that are playing the game today that we love, you know, the Spieths and on and on, when they see his stats, just like remember, guys, when the players today, the top five players, were handed Jack Nicklaus's a page of his stats, and you watch their faces, they just read them. And their jaw dropped. Well, same thing with Tiger Woods. If they had that in front of them every time they had to play against him today, that might bring back the intimidation factor.
It might. But, you know, one thing I think that's important is that the game is a little different today than it was when Tiger was really at his best in the early 2000s into 2005 or 2007, somewhere in there. The game is different. The game is technology has changed, has continued to gain. The game has continued to evolve with technology. And I heard some numbers where Dustin Johnson was hitting some new clubs a couple weeks ago in Carlsbad. And the numbers are just astounding. The distance that these guys are hitting the ball, the distance they're hitting the long irons, the height they can hit the long irons now, and all these things make the game different. A lot of Tiger's advantages related to distance, which now all these guys are pounding it with this technology, his ability to hit a long iron high when he wanted to. Well, today's technology allows these guys to really do that. The wedges have gotten even better and better. The ball's better. All these things contribute, in my opinion, to kind of steal a little bit, if you will, some special skills that certain players may have and make them much more attainable to the entire field, which makes it harder and harder for a player to separate himself from the entire field. And so you have a lot of players today who have grown up and built a game around today's technology that are great at it. And I think it's stolen a couple skills from what Tiger had that helped him separate himself. And so that's another hurdle for him, I think, that will make it that difficult for anyone, really, to dominate the game these days.
Do you think that, speaking of technology, now Tiger's playing totally different clubs than the Nike clubs he played for years. I think it's an advantage for him with these new clubs. I think getting away from the Nike, I was never a fan, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I just wasn't a fan, especially of that Nike driver. Do you think he's at an advantage now that maybe if he'd had these clubs back in his prime, if you will, he would have even won more?
Well, advantages relate to how it compares to other people, not just him. Yeah, well, would Jack Nicklaus have driven the ball a lot further than he did if he had today's technology? Sure, he would, but so would have everyone else. Advantages relate to how it impacts the field more so, really, than how it impacts you. And that's what I'm saying. Yes, would it help Tiger? Absolutely it would. But guess what? It's helping everybody. And so while it may have helped him by helping everyone else, then you have to measure, well, is it really an advantage to him, or actually is it a disadvantage, because does it allow some others to get closer to him that couldn't because he had such great skills before? When he first came out back in the late 90s, 96, I think, was his first year, you know, both Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus predicted stardom for him based a lot of it upon the fact that he could hit his long iron so high and so soft. Well, at that time, you know, the skill to do that was very difficult. You had to have a lot of club head speed for one. You had to have the guts to hit it up that high in the air and then let it, you know, be up there amongst the wind and elements and everything else. And he did. And he was the ability to do that. So you could stop the ball much more quickly on firm greens and, you know, places like Augusta and U.S. Open and those sort of things where he's been so dominant. And they predicted it based on that. And, but now everybody can. I mean, guys are hitting four irons, 260 yards straight up in there. So is there an advantage for Tiger?
Not me.
Yes, but the advantage really shifts to the other guys in a relative sense, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's a great point and very I like the way you think. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way that it works. We're talking with Phil Blackmar, by the way, with Golf Channel. And Phil, I'm kind of curious, too, to get away from Tiger for just a second, but someone else that's caught my eye, and a lot of people, if you look at the FedEx Cup standings, maybe caught a lot of people's eye and surprise, is Patton Kizzire, who, like yourself, is a very tall player and has kind of not come out of nowhere, if you follow the tour, but if you don't really follow the tour, he is out of nowhere. Already won a couple of times. You won early in your career in Greensboro or Hartford, and he's now suddenly, and it has been suddenly because he's been playing for a while, is in a different realm. He played with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas yesterday. He's kind of, and that's the interesting, weird, I think fun thing about golf is you can go from who's this guy to suddenly you're playing with the top players in the world and you're sitting on top of the FedEx Cup. Patton Kizzire is another one of those great stories that he might even be a Ryder Cup player. That's how fast golf can change and how fast your life can change on the PGA Tour, isn't it?
It can change in a hurry. And you see it a lot of times with guys winning one time. And to win is such a big deal. I'll never forget, after I won at Hartford, the next week was Chicago. And I was a rookie, and I never played with Jack Nicklaus and had just briefly met him a couple times. And he came up to me in the locker room and congratulated me on winning the previous week and said, "You have no idea what that would do for your career." And it's true. The difference between having won and not won, even if it's only once, is invaluable. But to come out and do it again, now that all of a sudden becomes an entirely different scenario, particularly to do it so quickly. Patton at every level, I followed him covering the web.com for the Golf Channel as well. Now, prior to getting to the web.com, playing mini tours and stuff, it took him a bit, but once he got it, he won a bunch of times, and he got to the web. And player of the year one year, but he kept going along. He had just a lot of chances to win and a lot of top tens, top fives, but he wanted to get in the winner's circle. And all of a sudden he did, and boom, he wins two times, just like he has here. So this same scenario has happened at every level for Pat Kizzire, where it's taken a little bit of time here on tour now, and then boom, he wins twice. And so I expect that he will stay there. He is a tall guy, like you mentioned, but he's a much better ball striker than I ever was. He's a good putter. And these days, if you can putt, that's the one aspect that really, I think, separates players, his ability to roll the ball. And he's a very good putter. And he didn't look at all intimidated out there yesterday playing with Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. I followed that group. And he looked very comfortable. And he's got a bright future in front of him.
Is it confidence? Is that what happens when you win once? That confidence level is basically validated. So it's you just go out there and go at it pretty hard or harder than you would have previously?
Well, you know, the two terms I like to use, belief and confidence. And I draw a distinction. I think confidence is the feeling that you can control the outcome of a specific event, you know, a shot. But belief is an underlying feeling that you belong and that what you have is good enough. And you hear players all the time talk about, you know, they'll have success in an event, and all of a sudden that gives them the little nudge over that bar where now they believe that they belong. And so it gives them a little bit more comfort level. Now, the fact that they believe makes it easier for them to gain that confidence when they're playing. Confidence comes and goes like the wind. Jack Nicklaus said, you can take hundreds of thousands of balls to gain confidence. You can lose it with one swing. But belief has to stay there. It has to always be there. And the more belief you have, the easier it is to find confidence that you're going to have in shots. And so, yes, he's, you know, for me, you can go to a lot of players and find that one moment where something happened that created that belief. For me, I played in 1984 in the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, and I was an assistant pro and qualified for the Open for the first time. And through 63 holes, I was in sixth place in the U.S. Open as an assistant pro, having never played. I played one tour event, and I really had no credentials. That was way out of the blue. But I always thought I could play, and that did validate it for me. It validated my belief, which then made it, and I got on tour the next year. So Yes, it's certainly helped him quite a bit.
Well, again, we'll see how it ends up in the season. But anyway, good guy to keep an eye on is Patton Kizzire. Real nice guy, too, by the way, and has paid his dues. But there is, on top of everybody else, when you look at the FedEx Cup, it may be a bit early in the season. But as you said, shot a decent round yesterday. He was one under, so playing with the big boys and some guys that are ranked in the top five in the world didn't seem to intimidate him much. So good for Patton. I'm also curious, again, we're talking with Phil Blackmore of the Golf Channel. What do you think about 16? Got to talk about 16 hole whenever you talk about the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Well, that is
such a unique place, huh?
A friend of mine, John Adams, he played the tour for over 20 years and lived out here actually in Scottsdale for quite a while. And he texted me before we went on air and he said, you know, he says, regarding number 16, he says, usually you have a pretty good lie on par three. So you really don't have an excuse to have a bad lie on par three, but you can sure get a noisy lie on number 16.
That's a pretty good line.
In fact, I used it when we were on air. Credit John Whitsitt.
What's it like to come out of that tunnel?
It's unlike anything else you've ever been around.
Yeah, what's it like to come under those stands and then to just all of a sudden the world opens up? That's got to be a really great feeling. I mean, you walk through with the players. So that's got to be incredible.
It's got to be what it feels like, you know, when guys come out, you know, through the tunnel onto the football field and come out of the locker rooms and the basketball court, that sort of thing. The energy is palpable. There's 20,000 people there. The stands are three stories tall, covered. I mean, it's an arena. And you don't play golf in an arena setting, but it is an arena setting. It's unique. I can't think of any place else that has that sort of atmosphere or setting. And as a player, you know, it can be tough. And it was hard on Justin Thomas yesterday. He got there. He was six under par. He was going along great.
Yeah.
He hit a wedge. The hole was got on the front. He didn't quite catch it. It came up a little short, spun back down in the bunker. And as is what they do there, everybody booed. And whether that bothered him, I don't know. You got to have kind of thick skin when you play that one. He got down in the bunker. He had a little bit of a downhill lie. And not a line of green will work with. He caught his bunker shot, thought, and then over the green, everybody booed again. And you can see at that point, you know, he was pretty red-faced and pretty angry. And he left his putt from off the green 4 feet short. And you just see him coming out of his ears. Everybody booed again with that one. And so it's
brutal.
It's tough. You know, as a non-player, it's entertaining to watch. But I will say, as a player, it's not a whole lot of fun. So what you have to do is you have to find a way to embrace it. You know what it's going to be. You know what it is. You got to laugh and smile. And yesterday, and I made the comment on air when we were covering it, he slammed down his club after he was in the bunker and hit the poor bunker shot. He kind of threw his club at the bag. And my comment was, that's not a veteran move to do that in front of 20,000 people.
Exactly. I heard that. Yeah.
Because they boo, you know, and now you're just giving them more ammunition. And so yeah. It's just wild. It's really wild.
I loved it yesterday at watching the coverage here when Stricker, of course, Steve Stricker, leaves it short right on the front of the green. And of course, they all booed. This is the Steve Stricker, right? And I said to myself, you watch. He's not going to take that. He's going to walk up there and chip it in. Well, he did. And of course, he went from GOAT, not greatest of all time, but a GOAT, to a hero just that quick. And it was really great to see Steve. And then Ogilvy's putt, that was an incredible putt from all the way across the green, 40-plus feet, and drains it. So that's got to be great to play in that stadium. That would be a blast. I'd love to just play that hole without anybody in the stands, of course.
You know. It's a whole different hole, yeah.
Well, yeah, but you're still with the stadium around you. It's kind of like going in and looking around when you come out of that tunnel, going, wait a minute, I hope they don't unleash the lions. Oh, here they come for the Christians.
But that's the thing. Going in there, you know the lions are out. They're there. And the thing you got to realize is you don't take it personal. It's not a personal thing, because we all have egos and self esteem. And if people start getting on you, it's easy, you know, to be bruised and react to that. But in reality, they're not seeing the name so much. Is it's just this is what they boo the shots that aren't good, and they applaud the shots that are. And just, you know, that's just what it is. It's not a personal thing directed at any particular player for the most part.
Well, it wasn't as loud yesterday, or didn't seem as loud as it usually is. But again, yesterday was round one. I would imagine Saturday is usually the day where there's a lot of suds flowing in those stands, and it'll get rowdy.
Well, and Friday night can get that way as well. So tonight, tonight can be very interesting also.
You know, I'm curious, Phil, because, and I talk about this a lot, but golf has to evolve, and every sport evolves. And just in talking about this and that 16th hole and how popular it is and yet how different it is than every other hole, yet if you're a millennial and every sport's trying to get those people, right, they're trying to get the 20 to 35-year-olds to follow, to be part of it, to play the game and everything, and you see that's what they like. I think golfers have been very insulated in the past because, as you said, the fact they're getting booed and they're – well, every other athlete in every other sport gets booed. In golf, it's rude to boo somebody. But in every other sport, they're like, hey, if you play football and you're in the Eagles, you get booed when you go to New York. If you're in the NBA, you get booed. Everybody gets booed. That's part of the game. And I think the mindset of the millennials as fans are like, golf shouldn't be any different. I want to go and I want to pay my money and I want to have fun. And I want to cheer if somebody does something well and I want to boo them if they don't do well. And I think golf kind of has to, if not embrace that, say that's the way that we're going if we're going to keep young people interested in this. Do you see what's going on at Phoenix? And it has already expanded a little bit, some other holes at different courses here. But normally on the tour, one hole per tournament maybe can be kind of rowdy like that and have fun. Do you see it evolving? I know you and I and Frank are all older guys, and it's a bit
easy.
Different. But do you see it evolving that way? Yeah, we are what we are.
Well, a couple things. Number one is if that's where it's going, I'm glad I'm retired from playing. Because yeah. As a player, it's just not any fun being on the receiving end of that. But it's been around for a long time. And we think that, well, this is a new thing. In 1985, the 17th hole at Greensboro used to be exactly the same, except it didn't have as many people. But it was the same thing. Everybody was drinking and out of control. And I was playing in the final group there on Sunday in 1985 with Ray Floyd and Peter Jacobson.
Oh, Lord.
And the wind had come up and started blowing really hard during the round, and all three of us had struggled. Joey Sindelar had finished early and posted a really nice round. He ended up winning. And so we were out of contention to win the tournament when we came to that 17th hole. And everybody's just giving us all a hard time. And one guy said, Jacobson, why don't you imitate the leaders? And, I mean, that's 1985. Now you go to Boston, where we used to play at Pleasant Valley out there in Worcester. The 17th hole was the same thing. They had a big hill up on the other side of the pond, short of the green to the left. And the people up there would boo and jeer and, be having a good time and would get that way as well. So it's not something what they've done here is the Thunderbirds they like it. They think that it's different and they want that atmosphere for the entire tournament. And you look at the attendance. And for them, they're trying to get a lot of people out there. Well, they're supposed to break records again this year. They're expecting over 800,000 people for the week here.
Jeez.
We had 104,000 people yesterday. They're supposed to be around 200,000. They're projecting on Saturday. Just incredible, incredible numbers. So hats off to them for promoting the tournament, getting the number of people out they do. And they've enabled it on the 16th by continuing to expand and make bigger and bigger and bigger the arena to house more and more and more people.
Yeah, hey,
so that's where 16 is so unique in that, at Boston and Greensboro, we played those holes, you would have a few hundred people around because you couldn't hold anymore. Well, here you got 20,000. So that's
nuts.
What makes it totally different.
Did they, what tournament, what was it, Greensboro, that they used to call the Pop Top Open because so much beer was consumed?
I didn't hear that, but I wouldn't doubt it, particularly up there on 17. It was, and it got pretty... It got pretty heated to the point that the tour actually, or the tournament, quit selling alcohol in that up around that area. They moved to the only place you could get it there because it got so far out of control.
There was a venue at the Players Championship 2 years ago that was you pay $25 to get in, and it was free beer all day. They had to shut it down by noon because it was so loud and so crazy. It was disrupting play on 18. So, I totally understand that. I wasn't in there, by the way, Tim, so don't say I was part of it. I was not in that venue.
No,
so,
but
some traditions, golf is probably one of the most traditional sports that there are. And I just don't know. Yes, we're in this new age and things are changing and millennials and all this age of quick return, quick gratification, social media, all these sort of things. The world is changing right in front of our eyes. But I do think that there's still a place in our world for tradition. No, it doesn't have to stay back, you know, from 100 years ago, but maybe you take a look at, well, what are the traditional elements about this, and what ones can we do away with and not worry about, but which are the ones that we want to protect? And I kind of think that's where golf's at right now.
That's very well spoken.
We'll see. I mean, yeah. I think there's, and it maybe, my guess is it's a blend of that. You know, you keep tradition, but just like they're changing the rules, they're making it more updated and more friendly for people that want to go play the game of golf. We got to get Art Sellinger on again so they on his soapbox about it.
Oh, Lord.
But the fans are going, okay, if I'm going to play, make the rules simple for me. Don't tell me I have to hit out of a divot if I hit my ball, all the on and on and on. So I think it'd be a blend of that. I think we're going to see some tradition stick around, certainly, and the great game. Baseball is kind of confronted with a lot of the same things. People trying to say, okay, it goes too long, there's no clock, and they're trying to make some changes in baseball, and others are saying, well, we've been doing it for 150 years. Why would we change anything? So it kind of is what it is, but I think it's interesting. I think Phoenix always brings that to the forefront because it's such a different venue and a fun event. Hey, Phil, we appreciate your time. We really do. We probably kept you overtime here, and I know you got to get ready for broadcasting and get some prep work going there. So continued success on Golf Channel, and we do appreciate your time. We'll be listening to you like everybody else and watching you over the weekend, and have fun out there in Phoenix this weekend, okay?
Well, I sure will. I appreciate it. I kiss the ground every day with the job that I have working for the Golf Channel, going around following these great players and seeing some beautiful parts of the country and the world. So it's a fun thing to get to do. I'm very fortunate, and thank you for watching.
Oh, absolutely. We'll see you out there soon.
All right, great.
All right, buddy. Thanks,
okay.
Phil. We really
take care,
appreciate
Phil.
It, pal. Yep. Have a great day.
Have a good one. Thanks.
See ya.
Right,
you too. Phil Blackmar, and again, if you'll be able to watch him, listen to him on the Golf Channel. But he's right. I mean, there aren't a lot of those jobs, and it is
no.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of excitement. It's you know, most people say I'd love to go watch any tournament, and you get paid to go to all these tournaments. The beauty of golf, I've always said, is as opposed to if you're an announcer for the NFL, NBA, or other, the venues are venues, and the fields are all kind of the same once you get there. In golf, they're all different, and you go from seaside to desert to mountains. I mean, it's just, so good for Phil.
Good job, too. You know, you get to do it. I've gotten to do it. We do it now. And I wake up every day going, how did I get into this? How did this get started? You know, well, God didn't bless me with this great thing that we do now, Tim, early in my life, because I probably would have wasted away at it, because there are a lot of distractions in what we do out there, and a lot of opportunities to get in a lot of trouble. But it's fun; it's a blast. Hey, what about?
Are you going to be at Riviera?
I think I'm going to Riviera. I'm going to head out and hang out with Lauren and Roger and Laura, and go to the tournament and probably get in trouble. But I think
so. We'll have you out there then. Yeah, that'd be good. We'll have another on-site reporter.
Yeah. What about Phil Blackmar, though? I mean, I don't know if you've interviewed Phil before. Phil's been a friend for a number of years, and of mine, and he is so insightful. You know, you don't see that when you just look at him and see him doing commentary, but when you start talking to him, he's a deep thinker, very much.
Yeah, good guy, too.
I like
very
the belief
nice
in confidence.
Well-spoken.
I really like that statement.
I think a reason that he's as good as he is, Frank, in large part, is because he's from Texas. And so I think that says an awful lot about the intelligence and well-spokenness of a man.
Okay.
He lives in Corpus, I think, now.
I think he went to UT. He didn't go to EIU.
No. Went to Texas way back in the early 80s. But anyway, good guy. I was at one point. I don't know if there's ever been a taller golfer on the tour.
6'7" plus.
6'7"?
He's a tall, he's a short.
I don't know
6'7",
if anybody's, because I think Pat Kazire is in the 6'5", 6'6" range, but I don't think 6'7". I think Phil may still be the tallest. Although there wasn't there back in the 50s, wasn't there, and maybe he was British, I can't remember. It might have even been left-handed. Wasn't there a really tall golfer back in the 50s and 60s?
My parents told me about those years. I don't know.
I think there was another guy who might have been pushing 6'6", 6'7".
Well,
we'll get our
crack research team on that.
It's rare because it's worth mentioning because there just aren't – golf isn't one of those sports. Most sports, if you're taller, it's usually a big advantage, right? But in golf, boy, you're a long way from that ball, aren't you? And if you look at most great golfers, from Hogan to – they're all at best 6 feet. A lot of times 5'8", 5'9", 5'10". So him being 6'7" is a long way up.
It's kind of like launching a rocket to the moon and you're one half of a degree off.
Yeah.
You end up, you know, at Saturn. It's the same thing with golf, you know.
There's a lot of stuff
in that swing that can go wrong at that height.
Yeah. I mean, you're hitting the clouds with your backswing. I mean, that's but good for Phil. Like I said, he won three times on the PGA Tour, once on the PGA Tour Champions, and now doing what he loves to do, following golfers around. So, it was very nice of him to take some time.
Great guy. I called him last night and said, hey, want to be on the show tomorrow? He said, sure. What time? I'm like, sure. Oh, okay. Usually it's like, Frank, I'd love to, but golly, man, I've got to get up, do research. I'm tired. I've been on my feet all day, yada, yada. But Phil,
the beauty of it is for a lot of these guys, especially Golf Channel, they don't go on until the afternoon. So their mornings are fairly open, although it's early for him, you know, for where we're at and out in Scottsdale. But he's also 60 years old, Frank. We all know how that is. None of us can sleep that long anymore.
I'm a little bit older. I'm scared to sleep that long. Are you kidding?
I'm never going to wake up.
I'm scared they'll embalm me. Okay, he's dead. He's dead. Yeah. Like at the PGA show. I think your friend in the back seat's dead.
Yeah.
Passed out. Whatever.
I went
to tell Phil, you know, he's not too far away that he couldn't make a quick, you know, helicopter ride down to Cindy Rarick's house down in Tucson. Wine cellar.
Yes.
Cindy Rarick lives on top of a hill there, a mountain, overlooking Tucson National. Okay, the Tucson National Resort, where the Conquistador Classic will be contested, brought to you by Coloplast this year. Big sponsor for them, and congratulations to the Omni Tucson National Resort and the Conquistador. Conquistadors, Tim, are just like the Thunderbirds in Phoenix, Scottsdale. They're a men's organization.
The volunteer arm of the tournament.
Exactly. Yeah. And they do a heck of a lot for charity. There's a great drink called the Sign Guy that I'll tell you more about as we get closer to the Conquistador Classic. That's pretty interesting drink. It'll sneak up and bite you.
I know. But your point was, what about this woman?
Cindy's
in her wine
cellar.
Yeah,
she has a massive wine cellar and always has a big dinner down there during that tournament every year. And I was going to tell him to sneak down there and check out some of the bottles in her wine cellar, because Phil's a wine connoisseur. She's got some pretty heavy stuff in there.
Good stuff? Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, kind of like that bottle of wine you didn't know you had that was worth like $1,000.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. Yeah, whatever. I wasn't paying for it, so I guess it didn't matter until I found out.
Yeah. Steve Johnson gave you that, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I still haven't drank it. Yes.
Well, I'll be out there soon. Yeah. So we'll cork it.
Yeah.
Lay it on its side. Keep rolling it. Keep turning it. Lay it on its side.
I do it.
Okay.
I do it. Although we're kind of getting, doing our remodel in our house. I don't know where it is right now, to be honest with you, Frank. I'm sure it's somewhere.
That's a cop out. I know you're hiding it, but I don't know where. You're hiding
it.
I gave you a quarter Glenlivet. Come on, man.
All my liquor's good. And it's still here.
Well, good. Don't drink it. I'll be there soon.
But I don't drink it all. I don't think if it would have stayed in your possession, it would still be liquid form.
That bottle would have been in a landfill a long time ago.
I could be wrong, but yeah, I like a little sip every now and then. But so
that's a good show today. Right. That was good with Phil.
Yeah, that was good.
It was a lot of fun.
It was nice to see. I'm looking forward to watching the tournament. It's always a good tournament out there. The weather's good. It's chilly in the morning, but it warms up. It'll be 75. And watch Phil and everybody in the Golf Channel. Listen to the guys on SiriusXM. Golf in Phoenix in the desert. It's a great time. Great way to spend your Februarys. All right, we are done with the show. We do appreciate Phil Blackmar for joining us. Thank you very much, Phil. And, again, watch him on the Golf Channel all weekend long with the rest of the crew. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And please be with us next time right here on Golf Talk America.